Penguin Random House Audio presents Available, a memoir of heartbreak, hookups, love, and brunch. This is the author, Madison Perry. Prologue. I dated a manic pixie dream girl. Act 1. We lay next to each other in bed, sweaty and breathing hard. My air conditioner was doing its best to chase away the heat, but the New York City humidity hung in the air. Moonlight from the window illuminated the tattoo of a phoenix covering the left side of her torso. I traced it with my finger, from below her armpit, over the speed bumps of her ribs, to her hip bone. I had only seen tattoos like this in the movies. Never in person, never this close, never in my own bed. I had found my very own manic pixie dream girl. The manic pixie dream girl has become the ingenue of millennials. Nathan Rabin coined the term while writing for the AV Club to describe the love interest in Cameron Crowe's Elizabethtown, but the character type has existed through the ages. Think Natalie Portman in Garden State or Audrey Hepburn in Breakfast at Tiffany's. Go back further and find Esmeralda from Victor Hugo's The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Admittedly, she had mixed results in snapping Quasimodo out of the doldrums of life, but still, she qualifies. The manic pixie dream girl, more a collection of quirks than a person, is the perfect love interest for the sensitive male protagonist. These weird, but always beautiful, girls appreciate shy, sad, creative boys and teach them to enjoy life again through sex, love, and various activities done in the rain. Though often perky, the manic pixie dream girl is frequently troubled. She straddles the narrow line between quirky and crazy, mysterious and strange, sexy and slutty. She is perfectly imperfect. And imperfection is the key. A manic pixie dream girl must be messed up enough to need saving, so the powerless guy has something heroic to do in the third act. I met my manic pixie dream girl, Kelly, in a sketch comedy class where, on the first day, she wore a bright red dress and cowboy boots. She had a look a guy might describe as exotic, though she'd punch him in the arm if he used that term. She had a boyfriend, so we couldn't date, but we began chatting online, learning about each other's lives while trading YouTube clips of Saturday Night Live sketches. One hot summer afternoon, we met at a bar with the intention of writing sketches together. But our plans changed, as they often do with manic pixie dream girls. We never opened our notebooks and instead went on an impromptu bar crawl. Each stop found us a bit drunker, and soon our knees were touching under tables and our shoulders brushing together as we walked. The night ended with a drunken attempted kiss, by me, which she ducked. "I can't cheat on my boyfriend," she said, "even if things aren't going well and he doesn't understand me." Not going well. There was hope. And I understood her. I understood her so bad. We hugged goodbye, and our skin, sticky from a day of sweating, stuck together slightly as we separated. A physical attestation of what I hoped we both felt. Turned out I was right. Within a month, she broke up with her boyfriend, and not long after, she and her tattoo ended up in my bed. Act 2. I'm not a socially awkward nerd by any means, but I'm not cool in the classic sense either. For example, I secretly enjoy doing my taxes. Kelly, though, she was cool. She could instantly procure a drink at a hopelessly crowded bar and talk her way into invite-only parties. Being cool seemed so effortless for her, and being around her made me feel cool by proxy. She was my human VIP pass. My manic pixie dream girl was either all in or all out on everything she did, so things moved quickly. We spent that summer acting out our own "They're Falling in Love" movie montage. We lay in Central Park and stared at the sky, ate moule frites at a dimly lit Brooklyn restaurant, tasted the salt on each other's skin after a night spent dancing, listened to the rain from bed. Unfortunately, There are no barns filled with straw in New York City, or we could have gone full Nicholas Sparks. But it wasn't a blind everything's-perfect love. Things about Kelly bothered me. I much preferred the Kelly I got when we were alone to the one who emerged at parties and bounced from person to person like a coked-up politician trying too hard to impress. She had a propensity for being late, suffered panic attacks, and had a streak of jealousy. She was my opposite in so many ways. Impulsive, erratic, electric. But I loved Kelly anyway. And this, for me, was a sign I'd found true love. Kelly wasn't perfect, but she was perfectly imperfect. Within a year, we moved to Los Angeles together. Act 3. What will happen to them if we break up? Kelly asked. We were in a CB2 store, home of modern furniture that looks better in the showroom than in your house, discussing dining room chairs, our first big purchase as a couple. I laughed off her question. I'm serious, she said. We're not going to break up, I said with a hug. And if we do, what happens to these chairs will be the least of our worries. Kelly wasn't convinced. On the ride home, she played with her iPhone case, taking it on and off, as she stared out the window. We'd barely carried the chairs inside when the tears started. She paced around our mostly empty new apartment, listing the reasons our relationship was doomed, why we shouldn't be buying things together. The fight lasted several hours. Kelly attacked the soundness of our relationship while I defended it. My arguments were rational, while hers were rooted in emotion. Eventually, I logic-bullied her into surrender, convincing her that her emotions were wrong. Of course, a person's emotions can never be wrong, even if they can't defend them, but for the moment, I'd won. I'm sorry about last night, she said the next morning. I love the chairs, and I love you. It's okay. I love you too, I said, before following up with the rallying cry of the manic pixie dream girl's boyfriend. Everything's going to be all right. Her smile said she believed me. It felt like I was rescuing her, and she seemed to like being rescued. As per the script, my manic pixie dream girl saved me from being a square in Act 1, bringing excitement and coolness to my life. But here, in Act 3, it was my turn to do the saving. Being strong for her made me feel stronger. This feeling of fixing someone is the true gift of the manic pixie dream girl. This is the moment when the movie usually ends, right after the man has told the manic pixie dream girl everything will be all right and fixed her with his love. Then the credits roll, pausing the story in a moment of eternal joy. What makes movies magical is not that incredible things happen in them. Incredible things happen in real life, too. No, what makes movies magical is they end right after the incredible thing happens. They stop when the war is over, after the team wins the championship, after the boy gets the girl. But life keeps going, even when it's inconvenient for the narrative. Act 4. The act you don't see in the movies. Our relationship carried on for another 2 years, and it was, for the most part, happy. I got along with her family. We had good sex. I made strides toward my goal of being a professional writer, and Kelly had exciting things happening in her career. We got a dog, too, at Kelly's prompting. While jointly owning a dining room set terrified her, the idea of raising a living creature together didn't seem to faze her. We named the adorable beagle puppy Murray, after Bill Murray, and I felt like the three of us were a real family. Thanks to the healthy cynicism regarding marriage any child of divorce should have, I wasn't in a rush to get married, but I could see us heading that way someday. But happily ever after is too boring for a manic pixie dream girl. The blow-ups became more frequent. Small incidents, like my not getting a sketch she wrote, or asking an, I thought, innocent question about a job interview would set her off. The fights often escalated into an indictment of our entire relationship. as we approached our 3-year
sample complete. Ready to continue?